Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Franco family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
Okay, so you know what? If they're doing, maybe they're doing something on a daily basis, I'd say keep doing it.
This is Focus on the Family Minute with Tim Shoemaker, sharing activities you can do with your kids to help teach them spiritual principles.
Yeah. Keep doing exactly what you're doing, but once a week, swap it out. Once a week, do something more active. Because sometimes our kids are tuning us out, their mind drifts, and we're not even aware of it because they're acting pretty good. But you can't check out of some sort of activity that you're having. And so once a week, do it, because one way or another, we want to use different methods to impact their heart and to help them remember God's truth. So sometimes they can do it where they sit down and they have a very serious lesson, but swap it out sometimes and do some of these fun things.
Hear more ideas about discipling your children from Tim Shoemaker at FamilyMinute.org.
Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Franco family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
Good afternoon and welcome to Free Talk California with Susanna Luthi on AM 1230 KPRL 99.3 FM. Phone lines are open at 238-5775, 238-KPRL. California Free Talk is brought to you by A-Town Diner in Atascadero on El Camino Real. Now open for dinner every night. Ask about the daily specials. And now, Free Talk California on The Right Choice, KPRL.
Good afternoon, everyone. It is Fair Week. I was there yesterday. Stop by if you want a bread heifer from my stepdaughter. Anyway, this is Susanna Luthi. You're listening to Free Talk California. Our guest today is Lance Christensen from the California Policy Center. You probably remember him. He was a candidate for State Superintendent of Instruction, Public Schools in 2022. He is an old friend of ours on the show, but it's been a minute since he's been on. So very excited to have him back. We're going to be talking about the governor's race and a new poll that shows Javier Becerra just soaring ahead, what we think that means for the state, as well as a preview of the November elections in California's post-Prop 50 congressional map. So all that to come later this hour. But first, I want to go back to my little talk last week on the late Lindsey Graham, because I completely forgotten a very productive interaction I did have with his office. And I didn't think of it because this was from a time I was no longer in Washington, D.C. So it was all done over the phone. But let me just walk you through it. And I believe it needs mentioning, because this was a big deal that made a difference in a lot of people's lives, and Lindsey Graham was responsible for it. So anyway, a short story is that I helped the committee that he was co-chairing as the minority Republican leader, the Senate Judiciary Committee. I helped them sink a terrible Joe Biden judicial nominee. This was a couple of years ago. I was working at the Washington Free Beacon and 9 months pregnant with my second baby. I had just started early labor when I got a call from his office asking me if I wanted to work with them on an exclusive story about a nominee to a federal judgeship by Joe Biden. Would have been a judgeship that would last for her entire life. The woman's name was Judge Sarah Netburn. And this woman had already made waves because it was in black and white already, that she had overridden the recommendation and the pleadings of the Federal Bureau of Prisons and decided to send a 6-foot-something male sex offender to a federal women's prison because she said any concerns of the women who didn't want him there were, quote unquote, overblown. Well, obviously, if you have listened to the show with any consistency, you know that this is a topic that I feel very strongly about. Women in prison are the most vulnerable to gender ideology. I think I've mentioned this. Prison was the first primary target by gender activists in the UK for creating this new sexless, sex doesn't matter society, because prisons are locked away. They're just completely raw. There's no privacy. And if they could succeed there, then they could then succeed in schools and elsewhere. So it all starts with the prisons, as we saw in California. So anyway, we had this opinion from the nominee, this document where she had said, yes, this 6 foot something male rapist says he's a woman now, concerns that he could hurt women are overblown because he's a woman. Well, common sense dictates that these concerns probably weren't overblown. We've seen this over and over. A very high percentage of these quote unquote transgender male inmates who go into women's prisons are in fact sex offenders, as we have seen from data from California that is now hidden, and data from the UK and other countries where this experiment is ongoing in the prisons. So the problem was this committee's, Senator Graham's committee staff had heard of a tip that this male rapist had in fact caused trouble in women's prison. But the problem was, would I get anyone to talk? They did not have specific people in mind, specific women or outsiders to talk to necessarily who had this firsthand. And so they kind of guided me in a direction of where to go. But I think the first source they told me would not say anything because he was too high up within the federal system. So anyway, I knew that the prison system would be difficult to pin down because, you know, I've been covering this issue for a while. Prisons tend to cover up any malfeasance by these guys because they don't want to rock any political boats. Basically, it's all very sick. So I was starting early labor, as I said. I started working the phones and I was able to get the sources. But I didn't have anything confirmed that day that I worked on the story. I told my editor I was going to race against the clock to get it. And the next morning I woke up and I was getting breakfast for the family and I realized I was in real labor. So I had to work against that clock, but also I had to work against the Senate clock because this judge was up for the Senate Judiciary Committee vote the next day. And that panel at the time was majority Democrat. And if she passed that vote, she was likely going to become a federal judge for life. So, worked the phones. My labor was getting more serious. I don't even think I had a babysitter that day. I think my stepdaughter had to watch Wyatt. It was just my oldest toddler at that point. So they were running around. Lots of mayhem. And this is the story that came out of that. I'm going to quote from it. Two sources tell the Washington Free Beacon that the inmate William McLean, who goes by July Justine Shelby. Oh, that was another thing. It was tough to track him down. You know, I had to confirm that he was actually in this prison, what his new name was. And so I had to get an off the record source to kind of point me how to find that, because it's all very hidden these days. They don't want us to know that there are so many men are in these prisons. So William McLean, who goes by July Justine Shelby, allegedly exposed himself to female inmates. According to Deborah Nizza, a former inmate of that same prison where he was, who was released in 2016 and remains in communication with female inmates at Carswell Federal Women's Prison in Texas. An inmate told her that McLean pulled his male part. I'll just edit this a little bit. I was a little more blunt, plain English in the story. Pulled his male part from his pants before a group of female inmates. NZA told the Free Beacon that an inmate related to her that Shelby told the women his male part was intact and still functional before wagging it at the women. NZA's secondhand account was independently confirmed by David Hogue, an attorney with the Arkansas-based law firm Hogue, Corbett, and Ward, who represents one of the inmates. Republicans from the Senate Judiciary Committee have been seeking confirmation of the incident from the Federal Prison Agency since early last week, but prison officials indicated they could neither confirm nor deny the allegations. So, go on. The latest allegations belie Netburn's claims in 2022 when she recommended McLean's transfer to a women's prison, that the transgender inmate's presence would not endanger the safety of female prisoners. Netburn made the recommendation over the objections of federal prison officials, stating that concerns his presence would be traumatizing and possibly dangerous were overblown. The harassment was reported to prison officials, who briefly moved McLean to an isolation unit, according to both NZA and Hogue. By June 26, however, he was back in the general population. Representatives for Carswell and the Federal Bureau of Prisons did not respond to a request for comment. McLean, a 6'2" male, was convicted and sentenced in 1994 for molesting a 9-year-old boy and raping a 17-year-old girl. Really nice guy. Really needed to go into women's prison. He was released in 2015, only to get a 15-year federal prison sentence 2 years later for distributing pornography of adults raping children. Great guy. In recommending McLean for female prison, Netburn in 2022 wrote that McLean, quote, identifies as bisexual, and her 1994 convictions were against both a male and a female. She said McLean's transgenderism expressed itself in, quote, buying herself new clothes, getting hair extensions, wearing jewelry and makeup, and having her nails done. How nice. While incarcerated in men's prison, Netbert noted, McLean, quote, dyed her hair pink and painted her nails. Quote, she is sober and under consistent mental health counseling and medication management and has maximized and stabilized her hormones with the target ranges for transgender women, Netburn stated. Quote, a theoretical risk of sexual assault by McLean without more evidence cannot support the Federal Bureau of Prisons position. Hogue, the attorney who corroborated the McLean incident, is preparing a potential complaint against Carswell on behalf of his client for an alleged rape by a different transgender male inmate who has since left the facility. His client is retaining anonymity for fear of retaliation. NZA, the former Carswell inmate, said the facility offers little privacy for women who may want to avoid male inmates. The cells contain 4 beds and do not have doors, and residents of one cell can see others walking to the toilets and showers. At Netburn's May 22nd confirmation hearing, Texas Senator Ted Cruz asked the nominee whether incarcerated women had the right not to have a 6'2" male who is a serial rapist put in as their cellmate. The judge responded that, quote, every person who's incarcerated has the right to be safe in their space, but said she, quote, reached a decision based on what the law is. All right, so... And this followed an order in 2022 from Biden to prioritize transgender inmates, quote, health and safety when making housing decisions, even as data show a high rate of trans-identifying male are sex offenders. All right, so there's more of the story, but that's enough. You get the idea. So I filed that story, shut my computer, went into labor, went to the hospital. Obviously, phone died when I was at the hospital. I was not paying attention. Had the baby in the middle of the night, and then finally, you know, the next morning when I was kind of groggy and I needed my phone to, because my husband had gone to work and I needed my phone to beg my mother to bring her wonderful homemade coffee. So I turned it on, and what I had was this just flurry of messages from Senator Graham's office that my story had come out and that it had been brought up in the committee and the nomination was dead. We did it. So here is, I'm going to play a clip from that hearing, but the big sign that Senator Graham's office made was in huge letters, Biden judicial nominee sent trans male rapist to female prison, arguing safety concerns were overblown. Now sources say he's exposing himself to inmates, by Susanna Luthy. So I'm going to play this clip really quick.
But a large Coca-Cola.
Coke Zero, baby. Coke Zero.
Here you go, Chuck. Happy birthday to you.
Wait, this talking.
I didn't give you anything. And now turn. Statement he wishes to make.
Well, thank you. NATO is obviously Graham. Aging better than I am, so NATO's strong and tough, and appreciate that. So we'll be voting here in a minute, Ms. Chairman. One of the nominees, Judge Sarah Netburn, was involved in transferring a prisoner to a female prison who was a biological male, formerly known as William McLean, a 6'2 biological male. Rapist, child molester, who identified as woman, to a female prison. The Bureau of Prisons objected to this transfer. This was a big focus on our side about the wisdom of that decision. And what we found, the inmate was incarcerated in 94 for molesting a 9-year-old boy, raping a 17-year-old girl. He was released in 2015, but was again convicted in 2017 to distributing child pornography and sentenced to 15 years in federal prison. In between stints in prison at the age of 51, the inmate began identifying as a woman. This was a big deal on our side. We thought this was a very bad decision, and Judge Netburn said, at birth, people are typically assigned a gender, a theoretical risk of sexual assault by the petitioner without more cannot support the BOP's Bureau of Prisons position. Well, now what do we have? We've got a report.
And here's the poster with my story headline.
The person in question has been accused of exposing themselves, male genitalia, at the female prison. We have been trying to get the...
Yeah, so anyway... That was the clip, and I hadn't seen it because, as I said, I was in labor and having a baby, was not exactly tuned in going into maternity leave. And just after last week's show, when I spoke about the late Senator Graham, our friend Amy Ichikawa, who was just on a few weeks ago, texted me with that clip, which I hadn't seen. And she said, I was looking for this clip, and then she added, please don't ever forget the powerhouse you are, my friend. I wanted to review this, and when I saw your name on the poster that Senator Graham put up in that committee hearing, I gave thanks to God for you and for your heart. Which is just probably one of the nicest texts I've ever received. Especially when you're a reporter, you just don't get really nice texts like that. And I said, thank you, I completely forgot I need to talk about this on my show next week, because I just was talking about Senator Graham and how I didn't really have anything to do with him, but wanted to talk about his passing. And I said, it's important to focus on these battles that we have fought for God and his children. And she responded, quote, we really have been participants in the war no one sees. It's been amazing when I take a minute to stop and take it all in. So I just wanted to share that because it's just one of those ongoing battles over an issue that, you know, I guess 10 years ago, we saw it coming. But say in college, I never would have dreamed that one of the hills I would have to die on is that a man is a man and a woman is a woman, and they can't just become one or the other. It is so baffling to human reason. And in many ways, it feels that the world has moved on. But then here we are in California, where our legislators are meticulously stripping the word woman from our laws. Every code, healthcare, insurance, health care. can't even say that a woman has a baby. OBs and midwives have to go through training to say that women aren't really women. Men can have kids. So anyway, a wild battle, and the tide has only, just a few years ago, I had friends, and I think I still have friends, who are terrified of making their opinions on this issue known. And I was sympathetic for a while. You know, when I was at Politico, we were forced to use all this gender woo-woo language in our stories. I never would. I'd make the editors change it for me. And I never spoke up to my media editors who were pushing this. I did speak up to the former owner of Politico, and I would gripe occasionally to coworkers, but the younger coworkers just never agreed with me. I'd make it clear what I said, but in the overwhelming consensus was that gender, not sex, was everything, and gender was completely fluid. And that was how we had to write and report, or we were bigots. So anyway, I get that. But these warriors like Amy, like Aaron Friday, many of the women and men that we have on this show, many of the guests on this show, have really been part of pushing back. And it's really difficult in the state where they are corralling kids in public schools into all sex, all gender, they call them all gender bathrooms, all cross-sex bathrooms, with urinals out in the open, etc. So this is a war that is still going. And if any of you have not spoken up yet, I beg that you will, because Senator Graham did. Anyway, that's all on that. Stay with us. We will be right back after these messages. Lance Christensen will be calling in, and we are going to dive into the brutal California political scene. So don't go anywhere. You're listening to Free Talk California.
Ace Auto Care in Atascadero, the best price and service on brakes, tires, smog checks, oil changes, and more. Ace Auto Care, all your vehicle needs, everything you want.
Fox News, I'm Tom Graham. The U.S. military has identified two of the three soldiers killed in action last week as part of the war with Iran. They were killed while in Jordan. Fox's Alex Hogan.
Military identifying them today as 25-year-old First Lieutenant James Freehan of Hawaii and Isabella Gonzalez of Texas. She was just 19 years old.
A fourth soldier was also killed in northern Iraq. The FBI says agents arrested a man accused of planting an incendiary device outside of a New York City federal building.
It caused a little bit of a little fire. He was armed with a pellet gun. Two people were injured, one federal employee and one civilian.
Assistant Director of the FBI New York, James Barnacle. The building in Lower Manhattan is also home to an ICE office. America is listening to Fox News.
Is proud to present Freedy Oak Revival. July 23rd, the California Mid-State Fair in Paso Robles. With special guest William Clark Green. Get tickets now at midstatefair.com and ticketmaster.com. Freedy Oak Revival. West Ham says to General. Freedy Oak Revival.
Welcome back to Free Talk California. I'm Susanna Luthi. Still waiting for Lance to call in, but I have to say I just got a text from a listener saying, Susanna, wow. And then a little gif, or is it gif, of Lindsey Graham walking cockily and adjusting his tie. Anyway, love that. All right, I think we have Lance calling in now. Give it a second. Speaking of texting, you know, I'll know you can text your questions if you don't want to hear your voice live on the air. So just text 805-238-5775 and we can get your question, but you can also call that number. It's always fun to hear your voices. All right. With that, I'd like to welcome Lance Christensen to the show. Lance is with the California Policy Center, and we're going to just dive into some gubernatorial and congressional politics. Welcome, Lance.
Thanks, Susanna. I appreciate being on.
Thanks for coming back. All right. So there was a PPIC poll a few days ago that found Javier Becerra has a 24-25 point lead over Steve Hilton now. And this same poll had him winning across almost every major voting block surveyed, age groups, sex, homeowners and renters alike, which is wild, income levels, racial and ethnic groups, and every quote unquote major region of the state, whatever they mean. I'm guessing they mean Bay Area and Southern California. So this is really wild for those of us who have had personal dealings with Javier Becerra, which I imagine we both have because he served in the legislature probably when you were there. I knew him as a reporter when he was AG and suing the first Trump administration over Obamacare when he could not answer a coherent question about what he was doing and relied on aides. So how did we get here, Lance, where this guy looks poised to manage a very dysfunctional and vast state with many problems?
So I think we're in the situation where a lot of Californians have just been reflexively voting Democrat for so long. They don't know what it looks like to vote for somebody else. And it's this mentality of vote blue no matter who. That percolates a lot of our, not just our state politics, but our national politics. And the problem with that is you get candidates in who may or may not be qualified or competent, but because they say all the right issues when it comes to Democratic policies, they're more likely to get elected simply because of the demographics of the registered voters in the state. And right now, we have 23 million voters in the state. And of those, the vast majority of them are registered Democrats. I think it's about 48%, actually, somewhere around there is Democrats, and only about a quarter of the state's voters are Republicans, leaving the rest of the middle into quote-unquote independent or no party preference or decline to state voters as the other options. There's a handful of, you know, libertarians and peace and freedom and independent party members, but the vast majority of the voters that show up on election day, usually 60-40, are Democrats. So when you start at that level, you realize that for as bad of a candidate that Javier Becerra is, and he is, I ran into him actually at the airport yesterday.
Did you say hi?
He didn't say hi. He was too rushed, so he moved along, and he probably didn't recognize me. We know each other, you know, from years past. But when he is on the ballot, just simply as a Democrat, he's going to get an immense amount of support just from that level. And that's kind of a sad commentary on our state politics when most people have no clue how he's going to stand on a lot of issues or think that he believes things he doesn't, knowing at the very end he's just basically going to be another progressive governor that's going to continue running the state of California to the ground.
I was talking to a seasoned Republican campaign guy here in California. He is not from here, but he's been here for a long time. And he said, you know, the reason we focus so much on voter registration is once you are registered to vote with a party, you kind of morph, your beliefs kind of morph into the party's beliefs. And it's very hard once you have assigned yourself to a tribe to shake yourself loose unless something really hits you right in the face. And he was using this as an example. You know, Sonia Shah is proving to be very successful across party lines. Obviously, it's a nonpartisan race for state superintendent, as you know, because you ran for it too. But many, many people don't want their daughters playing sports against boys. whether they're Democrat or Republican.
Right.
And he used the example also of COVID. You know, COVID affected so many people. So, you know, that shook a lot of people out of their tribal beliefs. But unless that happens, it's very difficult to get people to vote across against their voter registration. And that I found that really interesting. The other example he gave, and I don't even know this person, but he said there was this very strong pro-life leader. And when Trump was elected president, she just hated him. A lot of people just kind of viscerally hate him on an emotional level without really thinking through why. Anyway, she was one of these people. And so she decided to kind of join the libs. And then next thing you know, she became a very strong abortion advocate. This was someone who was a pro-life champion. So she completely flipped her beliefs to fit the Democratic Party because she joined the new tribe.
Yeah, it happens a lot. And it's unfortunate. When I worked in the Capitol for 17 years as a state Senate staffer, I would remind or help new employees and interns come in understand that once you join a team politically, you're on that team for the rest of your life, pretty much. And it's very hard for you to get out of that team for a couple of reasons. One is, once you've dedicated a lot of time and resources, like you said, you feel some amount of fealty to that group, and going against that tribe or that party can be very, very difficult. But also, there's the converse, too, which is if you leave to go to the other side, they kind of find you as a traitor or a spy. They don't see you as a new convert or somebody who figured out the right way to live and be happy, maybe. And I think that's especially true in a state like California, where a lot of our politics is based on what we see in the media and Hollywood. Really does personify everything that happens in Sacramento. How do you set it up for some sort of, you know, movie or you know, cinematic sort of experience, as opposed to doing the tough part, the grinding analysis that is required of voters to actually understand what each party does. And right now, people don't really know or care what Javier Becerra knows, does, or has done, or has not done, because they're so loyal to that party structure that nothing, no reality, facts, a future state where he might lock them down again, wouldn't bother them one bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of sympathize with that, leaving, because I was so all in on progressive politics when I first went to D.C. as a reporter. And then I was slowly waking up by the time of COVID. It was so hard. I think to really make the switch, I probably did have to leave D.C. because my identity, you know, my identity was such that it would have been pretty difficult. And I did lose a lot of friends. Just people just stopped talking to me, especially once I moved over to the Free Beacon. So, you know, it was much easier being in a whole new environment where I didn't have any of those contacts to worry about seeing at parties and so forth. But yes, I do want to take us down memory lane, though. I'm going to pick on my former employer, Politico, a little bit. Just because the coverage, the morphing of the coverage about Becerra since he became the Democrat choice for California governor is pretty entertaining. So we have to go back a few years to, you know, he was the golden boy when he was attorney general because he was, quote unquote, taking on Trump, you know, by suing him. But then he is kind of a reward for going after Trump's going after the lawsuit to take down Obamacare. He got this appointment in the Biden administration as HHS secretary, health secretary, which had a lot of people scratching their heads because there seemed to be no connection at all. But apparently he wanted a different job, a better job, but no one really liked him well enough to give it to him. So they gave him health secretary, I guess, because he was fighting for Obamacare. So this story is from Politico from 2021. As President Joe Biden's health secretary, Javier Becerra runs the sprawling department responsible for delivering on the administration's vow to end the coronavirus pandemic. But when Biden's senior health officials gathered one Sunday in August to make the high-stakes decision that all adults should get the COVID-19 booster shots, but Sarah wasn't included on the call. The episode described
like a pretty important thing.
Yes, the episode described by two administration officials was emblematic of Becerra's first 6 months atop the Department of Health and Human Services during a period dominated by difficult choices and intense debates over the direction of the pandemic response. The former lawmaker and California Attorney General has ceded much of the authority to the White House and government scientists and seldom been the one giving orders. They said that this limited role has left the government without a strong intermediary between a fast-moving White House and HHS methodical scientific agencies, contributing to breakdowns in coordination that have hampered the response and fueled accusations of political interference. That was pretty tough from Politico because they did not really hold the Biden administration accountable. So anyway, also from 2021, different story. Top White House officials have grown increasingly frustrated with Health Secretary Javier Becerra over his department's sluggish effort to house thousands of unaccompanied minors as the administration grapples with a record number of children crossing the southern border. The dissatisfaction with Becerra centers on complaints he's been slow to take charge of the response since its confirmation, according to 8 current and former government officials and others familiar with the situation. The administration has scrambled to find new shelters and speed the vetting of adults to care for the children as thousands remain in packed detention facilities along the border. But a month into Becerra's tenure, officials working on the issue privately questioned his preparedness for managing such a sprawling emergency and his willingness to take ownership of a historically intractable and politically divisive problem. He did not fully appreciate the issue when he first came in, said one senior administration official. And obviously we know where that led. He lost, what, 250,000 kids? All right. Yeah, from the next year, let's go on. Let's see. Also from Politico from 2022. As the Biden administration scrambled last month to diffuse anger over its sluggish response to the monkeypox outbreak, I forgot about that, Health and Human Services Secretary Javier Becerra floated an idea: tell people the states need to do more. The idea caused immediate alarm, according to people familiar with the matter. The Biden administration would look as like it was ducking responsibility for managing a growing health crisis, officials cautioned. On top of that, it could alienate state health departments that had been critical in the fight against the coronavirus. All right. Let's go back a couple months now. This is this year, 2026. Story from May, just before the primary. Democrats wanted a front runner in California's gubernatorial race. What they did not envision was Javier Becerra, whose abrupt rise from afterthought to favorite has left former Biden administration officials, his one-time colleagues, reacting with a mix of incredulity, mockery, and resignation. It's like, we need to figure out a candidate who can win, but then him? Really? Said one former Biden administration official. It's amazing. In the last several weeks, as former Rep. Eric Swalwell's flameout catapulted Becerra to the front of a crowded June primary, Biden White House alumni have been marveling at his stroke of luck and the growing possibility that the cabinet official who was widely derided and deemed to have been in over his head could soon be the governor of the country's largest state. All right, so there's that. But then let's go to a news story from Politico. Looks like a little different take. This is like 4 people on the byline, by the way. Javier Becerra could have taken the win, but he couldn't help himself. As a freshman House member in the early 1990s, he had helped preserve welfare payments to blind, disabled, and elderly legal immigrants, despite reservations from the Democratic chair of the powerful Ways and Means Committee. At a weekly whip meeting, Becerra rose to thank leadership for backing the compromise. But when the leader grumbled about the deal, Becerra kept talking, insisting on immigrants' rights to those benefits as the elderly lawmaker grew increasingly incensed. It was a jolt to a chamber steeped in hierarchy. The boyish newbie stood his ground in a war of words with the imposing lawmaker 30 years his senior. The stunning breach in congressional deference tanked the negotiated compromise and Becerra's hopes of nabbing a coveted seat on the committee. Anyway, what do you think of that morphing of coverage. I just, it really struck me.
Yeah, it's one of those things where when you spend enough time in California politics, they're always looking for the new up-and-comer, the one to challenge the system, and then they become the system themselves. And that's what's happened out here.
Yeah. Oh, this went by really fast. We're already at our first ad break. So stay with us, everyone, listening to Free Talk California. We've got Lance Christensen from the California Policy Center on. We'll touch a little more on Javier Becerra, and then I want to get Lance's take on the post-Prop 50 California landscape. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Liz Klayman, and this is the Fox Business Report.
The major averages losing steam in the final hour of trading and ending lower, with the Dow posting its third straight day of losses. Memory chip makers rebounded from recent losses, and software stocks also gained. Shares of Micron Technology rose 2% and snapping a three-day losing streak that has brought its value below $1 trillion. The Magnificent Seven big cap tech stocks were mostly higher, led by Microsoft and Alphabet. Shares of Alphabet rose 2% after the information reported that the Google parent is developing a server chip designed to optimize its Gemini AI model. Shares of Apple fell 2% and retreating from record highs. The Dow winners, Microsoft, Alphabet, and Salesforce. The Dow decliners, Caterpillar, Goldman Sachs, and Sherwin-Williams. The Dow down 307 points, the Nasdaq lower by 12, S&P 500 down 14. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Varsky, invested in you.
Most investments today feel like second jobs. Real estate? You're a landlord. Stocks? You're a day trader. Crypto? You're a full-time researcher. You've got a life to live. Your investment should help you live it. That's why more Americans are choosing gold. Noble Gold has helped thousands protect their future with real physical gold. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com to get your free wealth protection kit. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
When it comes to selling your home in the North County, one agent can only do so much.
That's why we show up as a team.
I'm Seth Peek.
And I'm Karen Peek.
And we're the Peek team.
And equal partners in every sale.
Pricing, marketing, negotiations.
We both do it all.
Two professionals reviewing every detail.
Two voices advocating for you at every step.
We tag team the work.
So nothing gets missed.
One mission.
Sell your home with minimized headaches.
We're the Peek team.
At Peek Realty.
And we work together for you.
Thinking about selling your home in North County? Reach the Peek team at Peek Realty. Just Google Peek Realty. That's P-E-E-K Realty. The Peek team at Peek Realty live wonderfully on the Central Coast.
DRE number 021-99910.
Back to Free Talk California. I'm Susanna Luthi. We are speaking with Lance Christensen in Sacramento with the California Policy Center. So, Lance, what do you think the outlook is if Javier Becerra takes over? You have watched him. How does he differ from Newsom? What do we expect?
Well, he has less executive experience, and obviously he was attorney general for the state, but I don't think he did that job very well. Didn't do the job of the federal administration underneath President Biden very well. And so coming in as the governor when he didn't have any time as a mayor or anything else, I think could handicap him if he's the governor coming forward. The other thing, too, is he's a radical activist. And a lot of people want to believe that he's somehow changed or evolved or improved, but pretty much every really bad idea that he's had since the 90s, since first getting elected to office, is either now coming to fruition or is on the cusp of that in a really very progressive California. So how does he let that Frankenstein fester? I don't think he can control it very much, and he'd be a terrible governor.
Yeah, yeah. He has kind of made a point of not answering policy questions, as I understand it. I don't pay a whole lot of attention to what he says because I don't need to. I know what he stands for. But is he trying to pose some sort of contrast to Newsom or not?
I don't think he would. I mean, basically every special interest that has wanted Gavin to be in office is going to be fully supporting Javier Becerra. When the left gets its marching orders, they get in line, and they march very deftly and very, you know, specifically towards a certain end. Steve Hilton is a great guy, a good candidate, probably one of the smartest guys running for governor in California in decades. Really is actually, when it comes to policy, very, very bright. Javier Becerra is not. Javier Becerra has been doing what everybody else has been telling him to do for a long time, and I think his last experience at HHS and the federal bureaucracy has shown just what a complete and terrible administrator he was, but also somebody who couldn't effectively communicate what it takes or what it would take for not just the country but for California to improve and everything that's failed in the last, you know, several decades.
Yeah, yeah. Well, since we don't have a whole lot of time left, I do want to dive into post Prop 50 congressional races too. Because we had some surprises on the primary election, from the primary election, specifically Kevin Kiley. But there's a big race up north that was a top target of Prop 50s because the Senate Majority Leader, Mark McGuire, wants the congressional seat up there. So they redrew it. It belonged to the late Representative Doug LaMalfa, and his death opened up an interim position, which his mentee, James Gallagher, the former California Assembly Republican leader, took. He won. So he'll be entering the post-Prop 50 race as an incumbent. What are the prospects, do you think, for him winning? And just overall, what are you seeing as the post-Prop 50 fallout? Is it as bad as we expected?
Yeah, I think it will be bad. Will it be as bad as conservatives or opponents have expected? I don't know. That remains to be seen. There's a lot of bodies in the wake of this decision. But what might happen to James Gallagher could be interesting because he did win the open seat under the pre-Prop 50 lines, meaning that he'll come in as the incumbent, which is important in elections. It also give him some experience in D.C. and help him at least make a name for himself and probably improve in fundraising. He's going to run against Mike McGuire, the current state senator from the North Coast, but also the former Senate majority leader in the state legislature. Not majority leader, excuse me, pro tem of the Senate. I mean, he was the top guy. And Mike McGuire, I've known Mike for a long time. I think he's actually a very smart, savvy guy. Very impressive when it comes to detailed policy talks, but he's also an avowed leftist and very, very progressive. All the problems the state of California has gone through the last many years with its fiscal problems, with not even high-speed rail completed, with CEQA issues that have prohibited the building of housing, the inability to stop wildfires up in the north part of the state or build some sort of resiliency where it comes to the urban wildlife, buffer zones. These are all on Mike McGuire's back. And frankly, he's not proven to be a very effective legislator when it comes to actually dealing with the things that are for normal Californians. So I think James McGuire has a very heavy lift to show that he can navigate these issues and that he can do it at the federal level. They both were opponents in the legislature, often fighting on different sides of the issue. And so they know each other well. This is not going to be some sort of, you know, rando versus an incumbent. This is going to be two seasoned legislators who have fought on both sides of the aisle for California. One has made the state worse, and the other one has tried really hard to make it better.
What's the scuttle in Sacramento over all this?
Well, I think a lot of people have looked at it and know this is a very brazen political battle that precipitated after the Texas, you know, realignment battle, you know, months or last year, I guess. And Sacramento decided within a few hours that they were going to move forward. They got and amended a few bills and pushed it out to the legislature, not thinking hard about what that would mean. And the lines that were drawn really to mock Republicans. For instance, one very conservative Republican that had been fairly popular in Sacramento area, the greater Sacramento area, was Kevin Kiley. He'd run for governor during the recall. Kevin Kiley's district was split up, you know, six different ways. And when you have that kind of thing happening, it makes it very difficult for a legislator in Congress to come back and say, hey, who do I represent? And it took him some amount of time to figure that out. There are other areas where you have Republicans on Republicans down in the south part of the state. You've got Ken Calvert versus Young Ken, both two fairly conservative Republicans running against each other. That's made it difficult. And so we're going to see some of these races dig at some old animosities that weren't there before. And the problem is these lines are only temporary because we redistrict in 2030, and California is poised to lose another four or five seats. Again, people are leaving California in such a pace that other states like Idaho and Texas and Florida are all gaining congressional seats that we're losing.
Yeah. I do want to talk, I mean, we only have a couple minutes, but Kevin Kiley, what do you think his prospects are? He decided to run as an independent. He had a really good margin coming out ahead. I think he was the first in his race to be deemed as moving on to the general election, and he is running against Richard Pan, who is responsible for making all school kids get vaccines in order to go to school, who doesn't have, I mean, I know a lot of crunchy moms who, if they knew who he was and that's what he did, would not be too happy. So what,
Richard Pan is coming in as trying to, you know, make his name at a federal level, but Kevin Kiley, he made some tactical decisions that I don't know, I question sometimes whether they'll be effective. Leaving the Republican Party or registering as an independent might be helpful. The thing you lose with that is a party apparatus to get the vote out. You have to depend on people to come out and support your case without the party support, and that sometimes can be difficult. I know that a lot of local parties had to withdraw their endorsements of Kevin Kiley because their bylaws don't allow for them to endorse anybody but a Republican, which makes sense. If you're a party, that's the job, is to get your party elected. And we'll see what kind of coattails he and or other people have to drag him across the finish line. Richard Pan is going to get a decent amount of money because he's part of the Democratic machine. So all the usual special interests will throw their money his direction. But Kevin Kiley has earned a very strong reputation amongst many independents and center-right individuals, even moderate Democrats who admire the way that he took on the government when, you know, Gavin Newsom shut down the state. So this is going to be a tough one. Kevin Kiley is a very hard worker. He's very smart, and he's going up against a guy who really made life miserable for a lot of Californians for many years.
He did. When I was at Politico, I think I helped kill maybe a couple of his really bad bills. He was one of those lawmakers, along with what's her name from the Oakland area. Anyway, yes, we have to wrap up, but yes, he was wanting to really keep us locked down forever, and it was pretty brutal. Well, thanks so much, Lance, for coming on. Thanks to all of you for listening. Enjoy the fair this week. Hope I'll see some of you there, and we will see you next Monday. You've listened to Free Talk California. I'm Susanna Luthi. Take care.
Free Talk California is brought to you by A-Town Diner in Atascadero on El Camino Real. Now open for dinner every night. ask about the daily specials. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton. It's